Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Janet B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. Today is Monday, July 20th, 2026. And today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are on page 52, the fourth paragraph that starts, The Wright Brothers' Almost Childish Faith, through one paragraph ending, who had insisted the Wrights would never fly. We're commenting on that one paragraph. Today's readers are 12 Steps, Laurel B., 12 Traditions, Lisa C., Readers of the Text, Robin P., Elizabeth D., and our backup, Penny E., newcomer greeter, Felicia S., and second hour host, Abby B. The reference number for Sunday, July 19, 2026 meeting is 23,645. That's 23645. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer, our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffered. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Laurel B. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Laurel.
Good morning. I'm Laurel B., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Chicago, Illinois. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me do service.
Thanks, Laurel. And I will now ask Lisa C. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Lisa.
Hi, good morning. This is Lisa C. from New Jersey. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me serve. I pass.
Thanks, Lisa. Our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 52, the fourth paragraph that begins the Wright brothers' almost childish faith through one paragraph ending, who had insisted the Wrights would never fly. We'll be commenting on that one paragraph, and I will now ask Robin P. to begin reading. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service and everyone who makes this meeting possible. Thanks, Janet. I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater, currently in Franklin, Tennessee. The Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which would fly was the mainspring of their accomplishments. Without that, nothing could have happened. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. When others showed us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who had insisted the Wrights would never fly. Well, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. I'm so grateful for Vision, and 14 years is a great celebration and just so grateful. And all of the meetings over the 14 years is just such a blessing. I wanted to just make sure I said that. When I left Broadway, I actually became an inventor and invented several products and brought them to market. And one of them was something for planes so people wouldn't get blood clots. The only portable pedals in the world that fold flat, come a little bag. They're 3 pounds and you can use them anywhere, even on a plane. And I had 3 rounds of manufacturing and retired from that. And I'm so grateful. But boy, man, at first people kept saying, you can never do that. Oh my gosh, they'll never let that on a plane. And even industry people would say, they're never going to let it pass TSA. No one ever had a problem. And it just showed me that it was that same kind of childish faith. But I know this would work. I know this would help. And it was a blessing for me. I still use it whenever I travel. And so it just reminds me of this paragraph. You know, you can't listen to the naysayers. And with recovery, you know, it's the same thing. You know, I feel like I'm still practicing God reliance in all my affairs and that I must have a faith that works 24/7 or I could perish, as it says in the Big Book. You know, we must have a faith that works 24/7 and reliance on God 24/7. And I feel like I'm going through a huge spiritual growth spurt right now where, you know, I'm so grateful to have 10 years of recovery one day at a time and, you know, an abstinence. And I'm, you know, faced with moving to London and doing this master's program for my visa so I can perform there at the West End if it's God's will, and letting go of our dogs, which has felt excruciating. And, you know, and I'm confronted with, why do I want to do this? What about me and my dreams? I'm so mad at myself. You know, like, who cares about your dreams? I love these dogs, you know. Is there a way we can work? You know, and just, I've been doing so many 10 steps, so many pro-con lists, so many two-way prayers, you know, just reaching out, outreach, spent so much time on outreach yesterday. And I feel like I'm at the end of me, which is where God probably wants me to be. you know, I'm at the end of my self-sufficiency, doing what I'm supposed to do. And we're supposed to move September 1st. And, you know, I'm just in this faith walk, and I just get to keep practicing faith walking, even when I don't know what to do. And, you know, sometimes in my experience, God is God of the 11th hour. And I just have to keep waiting upon the Lord and working my recovery, doing everything I can, you know, pray for potatoes, but dig with the hoe, you know. So I don't know if any of that was helpful for anybody, if anyone else is going through any challenges, but I just know that, you know, as long as I keep working my recovery, that God will show up and keep holding my hand through it. So God bless everybody with a very blessed abstinent day, and I pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. And I'm going to take a look today. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Thursday or Friday on any of the vision meetings, please go back so that your friends can share. Who would like to share?
Lisa B.
Lisa B.
Jessica C. Gail M. Jersey.
North Carolina.
Okay, wait. I have Lisa, Jessica, Gail, then someone from North Carolina, and then there was someone else.
Ann M., North Carolina.
Ann M., and then there's someone else there.
Larry K.
Loretta
Larry.
H.
Loretta. Y'all, this is such a good paragraph. Okay, we will go with this lineup for now. We have Lisa D. So we've got Lisa B., Jessica C., Gail M., Ann M., Larry K., Loretta H., and Ken W. H. Lisa B., you are up.
Ken W. H.
Loving you.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. My name is Lisa B. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, overeater from Michigan. So much good stuff in this. And it's right on time for me. I mean, I've been struggling with getting caught up in the idea that, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, and yeah, I got to remember to do that and this and the other thing. And it's causing me a huge amount of stress. And it's like, if you just get out of the way and you know, have faith that and rely on God, it's going to be fine. You know, you don't have to do that. But I'm so used to running the show, or attempting to run the show is more to the point, that, you know, I continue to struggle. So I don't know. I guess that's all I have to share. Thank you for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thanks, Lisa. And next up, we have Jessica C., followed by Gail M. Hey, good morning, Jessica.
Hey, good morning, Janet. Jessica C., recovered compulsive eater in Ontario, Canada. This is one of my favorite parts of the Big Book. I guess because this idea that man could fly was something, you know, man being able to fly at this point was something that had never happened before, and seemed impossible. And for me, you know, there were many times in my recovery where it felt like true neutrality with food, which had never happened before, it seemed impossible. All of my attempts to manage and control my compulsive eating, you know, sort of, you know, not working the steps, just using a food plan, or not giving up all of my, you know, alcoholic ingredients and foods and behaviors, it never worked. You know, there was always this lingering notion in the back of my mind, like, I don't think this is going to last very long. Is this really possible? It seemed impossible. I just love this idea that just because something has never happened before doesn't mean that it's impossible. In fact, it's, for me, it's entirely possible, you know, by finally putting down all of those alcoholic ingredients and foods and really working the steps and being as honest and surrendered, though imperfect, but doing it to the best of my ability, food neutrality did happen for me. And just like flight, being just sort of this kind of thing that people do a lot nowadays. It's just like something that a lot of us do. For me, like, food neutrality is just something that happens. It's not an unusual or an impossible idea anymore. And for me, that gives me so much hope around, you know, persistent character defects that, you know, just seem to dog me at times. Like, there is hope that this is not impossible either, and that there will be a day when freedom from these defects of character will just be like a normal, ordinary thing. But I have to keep surrendering to this higher. I have to keep working on my relationship with God. I have to keep enlarging my relationship with God. I have to keep trudging through the things that I want to avoid, because that only compounds my character defects. I have to bring God with me as I do that. And I think that is where it comes from. So with that, I will pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Jessica. And next up, we have Gail M., followed by Ann M. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, all. Gail M., Jersey, grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. Thank you all for being on the line. This is a great paragraph for me. I'm on the same chapter with my sponsor. And for what I hear for me is that self-sufficiency, it just does not work for me over and over with my disease, and that God's sufficiency is the way for me, and I will pass.
Thanks, Gail. And next up, we've got Ann M., followed by Larry K. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Janet. Good morning, all. I'm Ann M., grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater in North Carolina. And I, too, want to compare and contrast these two phrases, self-sufficiency and God's sufficiency. You know, I came in, like many people, my particular bottom was a lot of health problems. And I don't have those anymore, partly as a result of having released well over 100 pounds. When I first came in, I did a lot of self-sufficiency, and I thought I was working the program. It wasn't until I developed at least some sense of God's sufficiency, and I say some sense because, you know, I still try to wrestle my self-sufficiency periodically. But every day I begin with a lot of God time, with the God of my understanding. I chat, I meditate, and I repeat the phrase, you know, thy will, not mine, be done. And I do that throughout the day. And so not only have health problems gotten better, but I'm also emotionally sober, and that is, to me, the real crux of recovery, that I can deal with, and in fact, my life has a lot of complications in it right now, with family members, not my direct life, but family members, and I'm able to say, okay, what is the next right step that I can control? And what of this do I release to my faith in a power much greater than myself? And it works. It works so very well and so very much better than my self-sufficiency does. And for that, I am eternally grateful. Thank you all for being here this morning. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Ann. And next we've got Larry K, followed by Loretta H. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Janet. Thanks for your service. This is Larry K, recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. You know, I'm going to zero in on the part where it talks about we agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems, you know, as opposed to the God sufficiency we read about here. You know, for me, self-sufficiency is relying solely on my own strengths, my own skills, my own resources to navigate life without food. And the problem is that I have both an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. It leads me back again and again. And once I pick up, I can't stop. And so, you know, but it's hard because, you know, we grow up, you know, this idea of God's efficiency is a conscious shift to depending on his, you know, this higher power's grace and provision, where my human limitations are, you know, embraced as opportunities to experience the divine. And that's the place where the steps bring me to, at least for me. And the trap of self-sufficiency for a compulsive overeater like me is really a death trap, because it's rooted in the idea that I can pull myself out of the quicksand. You know, I can save myself and I'll never fall back into quicksand again. I can think my way out of it. I can act my way out of it. And in the context of this disease, I can't do that. God esteem is different than esteem from other people and self-esteem. You know, it's those things can agitate me as a human being. When I'm never good enough, I need to find the steps enable me to find a higher power greater than myself. You know, I think about childlike faith. You know, if you look at a toddler, weekend I got a chance to see a niece and they have a toddler learning to walk, you know, and it's pretty cool because he embraces the falls, you know. A toddler stumbles while learning to balance. We're going to make mistakes along this path. Of course you are. You're a human being. But we use these moments not for shame, but to practice freedom, you know, through relying on grace to stand back up. You know, we release the need for control. This, you know, my great nephew, child, trusts their parents have some things figured out, and they just trust they don't know everything. And I need that childlike faith as I approach these steps and continue to work these steps on a daily basis. That's what I need. Grateful for this program. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Larry. And next up, we've got Loretta H, followed by Ken WH, and then we will take some more names. Good morning, Loretta.
Good morning, Janet, and good morning all along with my precious God. You do and are saving my life, Loretta H., recovered in North Carolina. The Wright brothers, actually, their father was a minister. They were agnostic like I was, but for some reason they went to the Louvre and studied the paintings, the religious paintings and the birds. And that is how one of their, you know, that their airplane didn't go into the Potomac like Langley's did. And I had a job where their airplane was part of my life. And I remember, and I spent a lot of time being a doctor, that when I landed at night, I would get chills up my spine. How did this happen? And today I know that is God's sufficiency. I just went through a really serious injury, and I got an infection, and the infection actually is only controlled one day at a time. And I'm so grateful for this program because with God, and at that, I was really mad at God. With this and my steps and everything, I was able to get through it abstinently. It was a 4-month recovery from an infection from a knee replacement. And I almost lost my leg, but that's neither here nor there. And I realized the one thing is the surrender, of course, but the other thing was, and I think this is one of my favorite, common sense becoming uncommon sense. Because everything looked dark. That's the common sense. But then God consciousness is the uncommon sense. So my ego, when I had all this common sense during this stint, was very strong. But when I could get to a place of surrender, seriously understanding real recovery entails not debating every reason, I couldn't surrender totally, but the agnosticism went away. And this is, I have to remember this because I am, and a lot of agnosticism exists in my core, but I do have that consciousness because of program, because of the steps, because of you, and a lot of you reached out to me, which I'm grateful for, that I was able to get through it without hurting myself or hurting somebody else. And that was because God held my hand, flimsy reed, and took me through it. So I pass, and thank you, all of you. Go look at the paintings in the Louvre and learn to fly. Bye.
Thanks, Loretta. And now we've got Ken W. H. Good morning, Ken.
Thank you. This is Ken W. H., recovered compulsive eater from North Carolina. One thing I've learned from reading these paragraphs over and over again is that I can't fly. I'm a human being, and I was not designed to fly in any way, shape, or form. If I jump out of an airplane without a parachute, not only will I learn quickly that I do not know how to fly and cannot fly, but I will learn what it feels like to drop like a rock. The reality is I can't fly on myself, my own power alone. I can't flap my arms fast enough. I don't have the aerodynamic build, none of us do, to fly naturally, to float. So what does it take? This, I believe, this paragraph, this section, this whole idea is about power. The Wright brothers would not have gotten off the ground if they didn't have enough power behind them or pushing them and an airfoil that was designed in such a way forces under the wing, the power under the wing could lift it. That's the fact. Those are the realities. The point is I can't fly, and that the only thing is if I have enough power behind me, can I fly in the realm of the spirit? I have to have power behind me, in me, over me, around me. And I have to have enough power if I want to fly, if I think I can fly. I'm going to have enough power behind me to push me fast enough and hard enough to be able to get off the ground. The fact is that I'm powerless. I'm powerless to fly. I'm powerless to be abstinent. I'm powerless, period. And I need power. And that power is the God of my understanding, no matter how I feel about it. I cannot survive this disease or any other addictive disease without the power of God, without a path.
Thanks, Ken. And I will be able to take more names, but first let me tell you all where we are. We are in
Savannah G, Pennsylvania.
Give me just a second, please. Let me tell you all where we are. We're on page 52, the fourth paragraph that starts, the Wright brothers' almost childish faith, through one paragraph ending, who had insisted the Wrights would never fly, commenting on that one paragraph. So who would like to talk?
Savannah G. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Is that Kavana?
Savannah G., Pennsylvania. Yes.
Sue. Who else?
Heidi C.
Heidi C. Mm-hmm. Who else would like to share on this paragraph?
Maria P.
Maria?
Hi, Janet. This is Wygia.
What? Wygia?
Nancy P.
I think.
Roberta G.
Nancy.
Ayala.
Roberta. Ayala. So I think we can get one more person in. Okay, well, let's go with this lineup. And if you are not speaking, if you could just please make sure you are muted. Savannah G., you are up, followed by Heidi C.
Good morning. I'm Savannah from Pennsylvania, compulsive overeater. Thank you, Janet B., for your service today. And I want to just share that I wore the crown for self-sufficiency, which led to a lot of self-reliance as well. This structure, Savannah, was built on self-sufficiency. So for me to let that go has not been easy at all. Very challenging. It's getting better, actually quite better. And the thing of it is I had to go back and realize self-sufficiency because it did so well for me. I wore it very well and accomplished much. But what I learned is that it was developed because I had to learn where it came from before I could let it go, and not that I've let it go all the way, but so it was rooted, a lot of it was rooted in just in my early years, my really vulnerable years, for one thing. So there was no love or nurturing, so that was part of it, and, you know, that's what happened. My structure was being built. It wasn't from God. God had nothing to do with it, actually. It was all built in darkness. And so, you know, what do you get? Well, you get self-sufficiency, which leads to self-reliance. And I no longer, after I've discovered all of that, of course, I don't want to live like that, even though it accomplished much. And it did. But there was one area I just could not succeed, and that was with the compulsive eating, with the weight gain. I mean, I was almost 300 pounds. I was 277, which is what I've been able to, you know, through my doctor track. Could have been more. I don't know because, you know, after that number, I don't want to know. But anyway, so my structure is being rebuilt through the 12 steps. It's been hard at times, but I've never given up and never leave the room. It hasn't been like perfect in terms of abstinence, but I'm okay with that. That's a stumbling block for me anyway, perfection. So anyway, I'm going to pass with that. Thanks.
Thanks, Silvana. And next we've got Heidi C. followed by Maria T. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. This is just a wonderful paragraph that's making me think about how exciting it was walking into my dorm room back in 69 and a whole bunch of people standing around the television and the girl saying, come on, hurry up, get over here. And it was the man landing on the moon for the first time. And that wonder of, oh, my goodness, all of my childhood I've looked up at that star and thought it was cheese. And, you know, it's not cheese, it's just hard earth. But the only thing that I can relate to in terms of trust myself and with this whole, you know, losing weight and 12 steps and believing in God, which is coming back to me again, is learning how to sing opera. And I had a difficult time trying to hit a high note with a certain aria, and it was just endlessly not happening. And one day with my teacher, I was doing scales, which is a practice, and I'm going higher and higher, and finally we sing the aria. And she just stops and says, "Just stop it. Do it." And at that point, here I am singing and singing, and the note's about ready to come, and I felt like I was standing on the edge of a cliff, and I allowed myself to fall off in my mind. And there, all of a sudden, was that high note. And I have been able to hit a high note ever since. Of course, I'm a little on in years, so I haven't tried it, but that experience of trust, of not knowing, but just trusting, and then seeing the evidence is so awesome. Doing the 12 steps and coming back into that sense of a higher power, wow. I'm just so grateful. And that's up close with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. And next up, we have Maria T, followed by Wygia. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Janet. My name's Maria, and I am a compulsive eater, and I am from Norway. And this reading today made me think about the fact that, you know, he talks about the Wright brothers' almost childish faith. Well, you know, I didn't have a childish faith when it comes to my being able to be recovered from compulsive eating. I've been in and out of the rooms of OA for many years now. And, you know, I realized that that faith in God was really affected from my childhood. And, you know, I am an adult child, and that really had an impact on me being able to trust my higher power and trust myself to make a decision to accept my powerlessness and to completely surrender. I had the desire to stop compulsively eating all the time, but it was impossible to trust myself to make that decision. And, you know, I was completely self-sufficient all the time. And, you know, really difficult to make that, to trust myself and to trust my higher power. But today, you know, after many years of working on this lack of trust, and, you know, I've come to the clarity now that my higher power only wants the best for me and is like a loving parent for me. So today, you know, I am trusting that higher power, and I'm throwing myself into this program again with every ounce of energy that I have, and because I want to be recovered and I want to be free from this compulsive eating once and for good. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Maria. And now we've got Wygia, and then you will be followed by Nancy P. Good morning, Wygia.
Good morning. It's Wygia, recovered here in Maryland. And that was not my vouch. We'll put that out there. Page 52, what I have outlined here, childish faith. And, you know, I usually fly through we agnostics, but this time I did not. And when I read this childish faith, I think back to, was there another faith? The only faith that I had was that one day these size 28 blue pants, and yes, I'm 5'2" and the pants were 28. The only faith that I had is that one day they won't be tight, because now they're getting tight. The only faith I had was, you know, getting on the scale, would that first number ever be a one? I think I've given up on faith. I didn't connect faith with anything but that scale. I didn't really connect faith with God, a church, a spirit. It was always something that had no connection with me. My faith was all about the scale, relationships. So what do I have faith in now? I have faith in me wanting to work a program. I have faith in a power greater than myself. I have faith in, that doesn't sound like faith, Wygia. I have faith that I can stop my crazy thinking and just be settled. And just be settled. This childish faith, I had no other faith, and the faith I got was childish. And I stayed around long enough to, oh, there is another faith. There's an adult type faith also. I'm grateful that I hung around long enough to know that faith could be in my world also. It didn't have to be something I was embarrassed about. It didn't have to be something that someone had to explain to me. And if they did, I could listen and hear with open heart and open mind and open ears. Childish faith meant you can move forward. You paid your part in the childish phase. And last but not least, I know that faith is not about the number on the scale. It's about the love in my heart. It's about me wanting to take care of myself. It's about taking care of Wygia, not about that number on the scale. That's not what faith is to me today. And with that, I'll pass.
Beautiful. Thanks, Wygia. Next up, we've got Nancy P., followed by Roberta G. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Janet. Good morning, everybody. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts, or Cambridge, Massachusetts today. I wasn't going to share today, but nobody else was, seemed like they were too eager, but this is an excellent paragraph. And I am still an agnostic, still psyched about being an agnostic, because my agnosticism is what set, you know, shot me into the center mass of my recovery. And, you know, to me, faith, schmaith, who cares? You know, who cares about God? Certainly not me. And, but what I, you know, to go, what the previous, one of the previous paragraphs, our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And my point, my, what I like about that is that my ideas did not work. And I still, I asked all my sponsees, how's it been going for you doing it your way? And I had to ask myself, that's why I asked them, because I asked myself, how's it been going for you doing it your way, Nancy? Terrible, terrible, terrible. That's how it went, doing it my way. So I had to use some spiritual WD-40 and chisel off all the gunk in my mind and pry it open and listen to what I was being told for many years. And I, you know, my whole attitude was always, I know all that. Can we get to the recovered part so I can be a rock star? Even when I went through the big book step study once before, I got nowhere. I ate for 13 more years until I chiseled open my mind and listened, you know, to what was being said. And I didn't know what was going to happen. All I knew was that my ideas weren't working and that something else had to rush in to fill the void. And when I didn't care what it was. I didn't know. I was unable to embrace the God thing. I mean, I tried, trust me, consistently and hard for a long, long time, and it just never worked. So I had to open my mind wider and say, well, can I recover? And that's where it comes in. My ideas did not work, but I said to myself, maybe this thing could work even for me, even for someone who already thought she knew, even for somebody who spent decades failing, even for somebody who is arrogant and angry and jealous and all those things about for other people that were seemed to be so happy, joyous, and free. I thought, could it actually for me, even me? I mean, I couldn't believe it. I didn't believe it until one thing and one thing only happened. Say it with me. Surrender, surrender, surrender. And with that, you know, not I will pass, but when that happened, when I surrendered, it was like my whole life turned from a disgusting, dingy dungeon into a day spa, like Dorothy, you know. Can you even dye my hair to match my eyes? Uh-huh. You know, all of it. All of it changed to wonderfulness, fantasticness, and amazingness. And it starts there. Please take my word for it. And if you don't take my word for it, talk to your friends, because it works, it works, it works. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Nancy. And now we have Roberta G, followed by Ayala J. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. I really have come to rely on a vision for you to keep me from going completely down under the water. So I am somebody certainly who uses food to survive life. That's my mindset, right? Like I can't do life without the food. in this paragraph. And you know, hitting star one is just the last thing I feel like I want to do. And yet, you know, my higher power, whatever that is, said, you know, hit star one. So here I am, a hot mess, very vulnerable, because I feel that I have finally gotten to a place in my disease where I understand the fork in the road, not from an intellectual place, from a, oh my God, I'm going to die. I can't do this. I can't stop myself. So the childlike faith thing really touches my heart because, first of all, I love children, and I really appreciate what was shared this morning about, you know, in understanding myself as a younger person, as a child, you know, I learned the self-sufficiency and the survival like many of us have so that I could somehow construct a framework to get to the next day, you know, the lies I told myself. And a lot of that is conditional. And conditions of, I think what I'm learning about myself is that I didn't feel like God could or would save me because I
didn't figure it out, or because I failed, or because I have these character flaws. And it's so silly when I say it out loud, but there's some part of me, I think, that has just not let God be God in my life because I feel like it's my job to be good enough first, and then God can come in and bless me. And it's the opposite. It's the opposite. And it's so humbling to be at this point in my life, 62 years old, and feeling like that little kid. And that childlike faith is so beautiful because kids don't worry. They just know somehow they're going to land fine. And, you know, when they fall over, they do get up. But they don't beat themselves up for falling over. They just accept it. And I've never been that way. And I understand why. And I just feel grateful that I think I'm finally hitting that bottom, what they talk about. So I just have to be in this moment. And I made an abstinent breakfast and I will eat it, you know, as soon as I hang up. And I just got to keep this power close to me because I just don't have anything in me to fight this fight. So I think I have finally surrendered, I think. Anyway, thanks all for being here.
Thanks, Roberta. And next is Ayala J, and then we can take another couple names. Good morning, Ayala. Ayala, press star one, please. Okay. Ayala, are you with us? If you are, star one to unmute, please.
Hi there. Okay, so sorry.
Okay.
Technical difficulties.
Okay. No worries, go right ahead.
Thank you, Janice, for your service. Okay, so almost childish faith, I think that line tells me a lot about what faith means in the context of the big book. So especially to an agnostic, which I was, it absolutely felt childish to entertain the idea of God, like very similar to how I used to believe in fairies when I was little. But if inside each of us is the idea of God, which the book tells us is so, then we are, in fact, if we are atheists or agnostic, we're regressing, in a sense, to a past state, to a state from our childhood. So what I've come to understand is that if it feels childish to me, but I'm doing it right, I'm really going back to a less adulterated version of myself. And the part about sufficiency, self-sufficiency, God's sufficiency, it also takes me back to a conversation in elementary school about necessary versus sufficient. So my efforts are necessary, but they're not sufficient. So, but in the context of this program, and perhaps in the context of reality, God is sufficient. And so I am very grateful for this program and for the spiritual connections that it gave. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Ayala. And we've got 5 minutes left, so I think we can get in 2 more shares. We are
Pete,
all...
Pete,
we got you. No worries. 1 more person want to share. We're on page 52, the 4th paragraph that starts the Wright brothers. Let's get 1 more person in here. Okay, Pete, then you will take us out. 3 minutes. Go right ahead.
Thanks, Janet, for your service. You do a great job, and I appreciate it. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy. You know, there's a really, really fine line between childish faith and delusional thinking, right? Because there were plenty of people telling the Wright brothers that they were out of their mind. Right, but they had faith, right? And should they have failed, everybody would have said, you see, we were right and you were wrong. And if you think about, if I reflect on my experience, I had a childish faith that somehow, some way, I would be able to control and manage the foods and ingredients that trigger the phenomena of craving. Some way I was going to do it. Maybe there'd be a medication I could take. Maybe there'd be a new guru I could follow, a better sponsor, a new way to work the steps, a better book study. And I would figure out how I can control and manage these substances. Maybe I'll learn how to weigh and measure them. That could work. You know, I look at this chapter that we're reading has less to do about believing in a power greater than myself and more to do with crushing the idea that I have that power, crushing that idea that you can give it to me or that you have it for me or that you'll offer me some type of new code of morals or better philosophy that's going to enable me to live without these substances. The idea had to be crushed that that could some way somehow happen. Because the second that I do, the second that I ingest them, my ability, it's going to talk about reason at some point in this power, in this chapter. My ability to reason is always going to be failed. Every move I make, every thought I have is going to be dictated by these substances that are in my body. And until they get eliminated, it's always going to be the case. I had to crush the idea that I had these resources. I had to crush the idea that you could do that for me, right? It's gonna go on to say that we're going to have to come to the conclusion faced by a self-imposed crisis, right? I did this to myself, that God is either everything or he's nothing. This God doesn't care what I call it, doesn't care, doesn't need worship, doesn't need praise. I need this God to do for me what I can't do for myself, which is to bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the pain and suffering caused by these substances, and I make a choice not to put them in my body. That's what sanity is. That's what we're hoping to have occur for us. I'll pass. Thank you.
We've got 60 seconds left. Does anyone want to take it? A good chance for someone who doesn't talk, who just wants to say hello and let us know you're here. Okay, then we will wrap it up now.
Adrian,
thank you.
Adrian N. in Florida.
Adrian, go ahead. You've got 60 seconds.
Okay. I was in such a terrible mood yesterday and today, and I got a text that wait, let me read it, because I it says I've been in here it is The more we look for things to be grateful for, the more there will be. And it just totally changed my whole outlook and my whole attitude. And that was a God moment. And years ago, I didn't see God working in my life. But now I do. And that's the miracle of this meeting. You know, 14 years of this, 13 or 14 years of this meeting is a miracle. And with that, I pass.
What a beautiful way to end the meeting. And thank you to everyone who read and shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, June 20th, 2026, 7 a.m. meeting is 23,646. That's 23646. Now ask Elizabeth G. to please read A Vision for You, or book is meant to be suggestive only. Elizabeth, star one, please.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yeah, all good.
Okay, great. This is one page 164. our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until